Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and today we're chatting all things sleep. Sleep is my second favorite subject after hydration, but I don't know if I prefer to sleep or drink water, so maybe sleep might be the winner. And we're joined by Dr. Michelle Baker, and just bear with me while I read through all of the titles and accomplishments the doctor has. Master's degree in clinical psychology, master's in clinical technology in neuropsychology, specialist in neuropsychology and insomnia, chairperson of the Allied Group for the South African Society of Sleep, and vice chairperson of the South African Society of Sleep Health. We're going to be chatting all about sleep, so let us have your questions or comments on 061-895-1019. That's our in-studio WhatsApp number, and we'll do what we can to answer them for you. We're here to help you become as healthy as possible and as optimal as you can.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us here on 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday. I'm Nicholas Ingle, and I'm joined by Dr. Michelle Baker, a master's degree in clinical psychology. I won't go through all of your titles again, Doctor, but you are a sleep expert, and we're chatting sleep. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, and I hope you can hear me very well.
We can hear you perfectly. Thank you.
It's delightful to be with a subject like all things sleep, because obviously it's something that I love to talk about, and also love your concept of to help people become as healthy as possible, because it's such a simple thing to remind people about, is that health, starts with good sleep. So those of us who work in sleep disorders always work for a 24-hour cycle. So it's not just looking at people's health and mental health and their physical health, but it's also looking at nighttime. You know, what's going on at night? Are they sleeping well? Are they achieving a good quality of sleep? And more than anything else, do they wake up refreshed and restored in the morning? You know, how's their daytime function? So it's a vital biological drive, and it should never be neglected. So thank you for highlighting it.
No, it's refreshing to know. Absolutely. It is vital. I think optimal health really starts the night before. You know, it's what we do, how much we respect our sleep. So if we could touch on it briefly, what is sleep? And scientifically, what is regarded as a good night's sleep?
Okay, so if we just go, so sleep is, we've just established an essential biological drive. So it's very much comes from sort of an instinctual part of the brain that breathes our breath and beats our heart. Sleep sleeps from that department in the brain. So it is not something useful to try and start controlling sleep in our own special ways, especially in this busy world that we live in. But I think that word you used is respecting sleep. You know, if we don't wear sleep deprivation like a badge of honor, it's sort of people brag about it. Oh, I only sleep for 4 hours and I'm, you know, vibe it out. But the reality is that, you know, that's not really healthy living. Sleep itself is one of the most important and essential parts of biological rhythm, because it belongs to a bundle of other circadian rhythms. So, you know, whilst we're sleeping well, we're also then ensuring that all our metabolic functions working, you know, that our reproductive system is working well. They all link up together. So if we sleep well, we also help our whole biological self to balance. It's all about balance. You know, we always go back to that state of sort of, you know, So I always love to think of sleep like the ocean or a beautiful orchestral, you know, sort of song where everything's in sync, you know. The tides are all working well, or if that's very high, you know, very high seas, there's a reason for that. And every single link in the brain would point towards neurochemistry also being right in the brain. So, you know, if we've got all our ducks in a row and we're sleeping well at night at the right time for us, because mm-hmm. each of us differs there in terms of when, you know, if we're an early bird or a night owl, but sleep by definition really is a restorative and refreshing part of our biological drive. And on top of that, we also know that a lot of important things happen during sleep, like memory consolidation. Our brains also take a shower at night with what is known as the glymphatic system, where, you know, there's cleaning out of all the sort of debris. It's like the garbage disposal unit during certain stages and phases. And there's also, you know, sort of pruning and cleaning out as well as, you know, restoration. But memory consolidation and a lot of what we call cognition is actually consolidated and organized during our sleep. So, look, there's probably a lot more, but I think that will probably be a nice succinct summary of, like, what is sleep? Right. So we go back to, well, sleep is vital. It is totally important. And if you're not going to actually focus on it as something that you feel is vital, then you're probably not going to feel that great during the day and you're not going to function as well.
And the problem with that is where it becomes a habit or a lifestyle over an extended period of time, that your base of feeling optimal or feeling great starts to lower, so you don't even realize that. Doc, you touched on circadian rhythms, and this is something that I think is so important and I've tried to bring into my own lifestyle, is in the evening, as soon as I feel tired, if I can, I go to bed. I don't try and push through that, get some work done, because then I know I'm up for another 4 hours before I can start to feel tired again. How important is, I suppose it's an obvious question, but how important is listening to our bodies in terms of falling asleep and the quality of the sleep?
It's very important because, you know, you don't want to go to bed awake and say it's bedtime and then you lie there for an hour trying to fall asleep. So taking the sleepy to bed is very important. But having said that, it's also at the right time, you know. So, you know, we're essentially not nocturnal creatures. We're diurnal creatures. We're supposed to be awake during the day and sleeping at night. But, you know, shift work and things like that have moved that all. But, you know, it's also about timing. So the average Joe would probably feel sleepy and be wanting to go, you know, to bed around about 9:30, 10-ish, mm-hmm. sleeping through to about 5:30, 6:00. Whereas early birds might feel that feeling you describe, you know, as early as sort of 8:30, 9:00, and by 9:30 they're wanting to put lights out and they're sleeping till about 5 a.m. And then the night owl, you know, doesn't really feel sleepy at all until sort of 11 or even midnight, and then wants to sleep through till about 7:00. So, you know, knowing what that's called your chronotype. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how does your circadian drive work? The other thing it also depends on that a lot of people forget is, again, daytime function. So if you're getting up, you know, at 5 or 6 o'clock, you're already, once you're up and about, you're already building sleep load. Mm-hmm. And that sleep load in the morning, in sync with your biological drive, is very important because it's building up the propensity to sleep for nighttime. You know, it's building up that pressure. And so, you know, if you take the kids to school and you come back and go, I'm exhausted, I'm going to sleep for another 2 hours, and you go back to bed at, you know, at like 9 a.m., you're completely messing that up. And then people would then wake up feeling awful, you know, because you're out of sync of your own circadian rhythm. You get what's called sleep inertia. So, you know, that sleeping in late, that sleeping when you're not really sleepy biologically. But half the time people are just sleeping because they're so exhausted, you know, they're catching up on sleep deprivation. So I just want to make sure I answered your question. So the question was more linked to circadian rhythms and how important they are. Yes. So I hope that nails it. Yep, so we need absolutely. To sleep in that circadian drive. That sleepy you describe must be dark coming in and the onset of melatonin starting. So now we've got you know, the sort of sync going on in the body.
So I take this quite seriously. So as soon as I feel like that, I'm at home, I switch all of my lights to red, and I get prepped for bed, go have a shower. I like to have a cold shower before bed because I find then it sort of warms me up, and then I can have a good night's sleep. Because for me, my challenge is I'm up every morning at 4 a.m. because of running a gym. And for me, it's easier to wake up at 4 a.m. than it is to wake up at 5. So even if I have clients coming in at 6, as an example, I'm still up at 4 because I find I'm higher functioning waking up when that's when my body's happy to wake up. So I think these are important things to listen to. But the point that you made about a night owl or an early bird, a lot of people sort of tend to attach their sleep to their lifestyle or their work, right? And how damaging can that be to the quality of our sleep? I want to touch on that. We're just going to go to an ad break now, and then if we could touch on that when we're back. All right, great. Dis-Chem, great, thank you. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday live on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and we are joined by sleep expert Dr. Michelle Baker. Let us have your questions or comments regarding sleep. How are you sleeping? Are you getting enough sleep? What's the quality of your sleep like? WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. Doctor, just before we went to the ad break, it's quite funny because, like, I've forgotten the question now. That's my ADHD. And also, unfortunately, I had about 3 hours sleep last night because it was just a very, very late day. So I'm proof of the lower cognitive function with sleep or without.
That's fine. I've got it. We were actually talking about the quality of sleep according to work choice, and it's a very powerful question. Yeah, it's an excellent one. So it links into what you were talking about before around circadian rhythms, night owls, you know, early birds, etc. But more than anything else, it's the strength of the external influences, which you've already mentioned. You know, things like darkening the bright lights, you know, because if you think about the cavemen, you know, if we go back hundreds of years, how did people sleep? Very interestingly, not like we do now. Most of the time they would sleep in batches, you know, to go out hunting and then come back and they'd be awake for hours and then they'd be awake for days while they were hunting. So they used what's called polyphasic sleep. You know, so your body can sort of do these catches up with having a bit of sleep here and a bit of sleep there. But if we just put it as a starting point that ideally, because of the science we've done in sleep medicine now, we know that biologically people do best when they sleep in one phase, which is then linked to, you know, their biological drive. So that's where you're going to get your optimal sort of health. And you're going to be that much more refreshed and awake, and your quality of sleep will be better, and therefore your production, you know, would. But nowadays with work choices, I mean, your choice is an interesting one, because I have a daughter who lives in America, and she lives in one state and she works in another, and that's like 4 hours behind her. So she has a similar schedule to you, where she'll get up at 3:30 in the morning to be ready to go online at 4:30, because it's actually that time, you know, in another state for her. And, you know, people are working often, you know, where they're working through the night here and sleeping during the day, but that's essentially shift work.
Yes.
So, you know, when you're shifting that phase too much and you really are pushing against biological drive, obviously that we know from, you know, a lot of research and shift work, it's not ideal. Biologically, it's not ideal. And it actually is connected with a lot of risk factors.
Right.
So, you know, to answer your question around what is the quality of sleep and our work choice, well, you can adapt within a few hours or so, you know, where your body, you'll still do pretty well and thrive. And sometimes there is the sense that the phase is sort of shifting by a little sort of 2 hours back or 2 hours forward. In fact, that's even almost too much. Mm-hmm. Once you start moving past about a 30-minute margin either side, you know, that extra hour that you're trying to sort of push into your work, you're starting to get sleep deprived, mm-hmm. you know. So think of it like the bank. If you borrow money from the bank, they're not going to say to you, listen, thanks, you can have it. We don't need it back. They're going to want you to pay back. Your body does the same.
Right.
And then you, I don't know, you can speak into it yourself, but you'll often find that despite the fact that you may be selling yourself or shortchanging a little bit because of the hours you've moved, you then have a day where you just go, no, look, seriously, mm-hmm. I'm like really stuffed today. I have to sleep. You can feel it in your body. The sleepy is more than just that little sleep. It is an overwhelming urge, and you just go, you let go and you catch up, you know. It's not ideal, but I think the answer to your question is that we do adapt. And in this day and age, I think that's where the big message is. Be careful mm-hmm. about how you're adapting.
Yes.
And if you are, you know, do you have that one day off when you really can actually just relax and be, and then sometimes catch up on sleep and just you let your body, you know, settle a little bit, because it's not good for you, especially if it's shift work, and especially different types of shift work, you know, are particularly bad.
Yeah. So for myself, I try and catch up on the weekend to an extent. So I'll usually wake up naturally at about 7 a.m. But what I find, just chatting about myself in this, where I monitor my heart rate, up until 5 o'clock, 5:30, my heart rate is well above my resting heart rate, which is the standard set around about 55 now. And my heart rate's dropping sort of 45 after 5 up until 7. So I know I'm missing out on the deeper rest part of the recovery. So it is about also making lifestyle choices, because it's understanding that we're stealing from our older self with the extra work that we're doing now. And I think getting to that point can be a challenge. How effective, Doc, are naps in terms of catching up or being part of our day, our daily routine?
Look, they are effective, and there's quite a bit of research to support that they certainly help recovery. And in certain conditions, they're almost essential. So say, for instance, in a sleep disorder called narcolepsy, you know, where people have this irresistible urge to fall asleep during the day, and they do, and then at night they have insomnia. So it's really a paradoxical issue. They rest, you know, have these rest periods, which are very refreshing. They can have a sleep for 10, 15 minutes, and they're very refreshed. And then the other one they have done studies on is what they call a power nap.
Mm-hmm.
So the power nap, again, it has quite a lot of research behind it. And it really is just sort of putting your feet up for, you know, 30 minutes or so, closing your eyes and going out, and then you wake up quite refreshed. I've got it to an art in my lunchtime. It's sort of like have a meal and then I do my 30-minute nap, and it's fantastic, because that afternoon slump comes, mm-hmm. you know, after lunch, and it does tend to help. And again, it's sort of depending on time. You know, an early bird might want to be napping between, say, 12 and about 2 p.m., mm-hmm. whereas a night owl would want that nap slightly later. You know, for the average Joe, we kind of do that midday, you know, 1 o'clock-ish, you know, 30 minutes out, mm-hmm. and it's refreshing, and so it will actually restore you again. However, it is how do we contextualize the word nap? So nap means what I've just said, a power nap, in and out, you're done. But napping in the afternoon when you go, it's actually my rest, it's my sleep, so that's like 3-4 hours, that is going to completely turn sleep on its head.
Right.
And then if you then decide you're going to go to bed at 9 or 10 and you can't get to sleep, well, go figure, because you've actually used up. And again, that, you know, because of that sleep load you're building during the morning, It dips off a little bit after lunch. That's why we have that thing that we call the postprandial dip, when, you know, you feel very tired and you've eaten and, you know, people go, oh, well, it's digesting my food. No, well, it's also the sleep circadian rhythm that starts losing its impetus, where the brain doesn't want to be that awake, and then all of a sudden all the neurochemistry picks up again. Mm-hmm. And then you get that second wind. So if you go napping, like, in your easy chair in front of the TV when you get home at 5 p.m., that is a bad choice, mm-hmm. because you are then, you're going to change the face of the sleep load. You're going to change that, and then, you know, you want to go to bed. And one of the big questions, because I work in insomnia a lot, and one of the big questions is, why can I fall asleep in front of the TV, and the minute I get up to go to bed, I'm wide awake, and I was fast asleep before? So it's an easy one to explain to people. But to answer your question about napping, good and bad, it's time of day, and it's how, it's duration. It's how long do you nap for?
It's interesting you talk about the 10 to 15 minutes, because I know for myself, 12 minutes, that's my nap time. I can set an alarm for 30 minutes, but 12 minutes in, I wake up. And then if I go back to sleep and wait for the then I'm groggy. So as soon as I'm up, then I'm up and I'm fired up and running around. So what is insomnia?
Whoa, that's a very loaded question. Sorry. But just before you go can I just pick up on that word groggy? Because that word groggy is a really good one, because in sleep we call it sleep inertia. Mm-hmm. And it is a very distinctive feeling you get when you sleep too much or you sleep at the wrong time of day, you know. And I think it's important for people to remember that, because the choice of where you sleep, you know, within your phase is going to make a difference to that groggy. Because post-COVID, we've also got another thing that people call brain fog.
Yes.
You know, when we look at people who are working very, very long hours and pushing their limits in this busy, busy, gotta go world, they actually also talk about this thing called feeling groggy and having this foggy head. And so when we get their sleep right, we very often see big changes in that sort of headspace. Okay.
Right.
Now, I've lost the question you asked after
We were chatting about sort of what is insomnia.
Oh, yes. Okay. So, you know, look, insomnia is the most, what's the highest level or prevalence of sleep disorder. You know, we have numerous sleep disorders. And insomnia is that a disorder where you have a period of time where your sleep was good and then sleep goes bad. Mm-hmm. So there's always that beginning of, is it good sleep or bad sleep, or are we now moving into insomnia? So we use the criteria as, if you've had about three days a week for about 3 weeks, now you're starting to get what's called an acute insomnia. So you're moving into a phase where now you've had quite a number of bad nights. You've probably got accumulated sleep debt. You're feeling really off. You know, you're miserable. Your mood's been affected. You're worried you're going to drop the ball at work. You know, that often happens during a precipitating event. So in other words, something like COVID was huge. Mm-hmm. That's a sort of crisis and a traumatic event. In our lives, it's very often something like, you know, sharing a bed with a bed partner for the first time, or having, you know, a pregnancy or a child, or having a really difficult interpersonal upset at work. There's a number of reasons. Pain is a big one. We could list a whole bundle of things. But if we're just talking primary insomnia, in other words, it can be diagnosed as a disorder on its own. We can treat it and we can get people better quickly. That's pretty much what it looks like. When it gets to be chronic, it's mostly driven by the way people are thinking about their sleep. So the event has passed, but they're still not sleeping well. And that's mostly driven by how we think and how we develop strategies to try and control sleep, when in fact it needs to control itself. The link between insomnia that's really strong from a mental health perspective is anxiety and depression.
Right.
We often see those two problems. And then the other one in South Africa is post-traumatic stress disorder. But remembering too that insomnia is often not insomnia; it's another sleep disorder. So that's why I'm saying that is another whole talk. Yeah. But if we just stick with insomnia today, it's that sort of sense of your sleep was great and then it went wrong.
Okay. So I think, you know, our bodies are much smarter than we are. And we don't give our bodies enough credit for how smart they really are. What can, and we've touched on it with the anxiety, with the depression, with the post-traumatic stress, you know, if we look at the modern tools that are available to us, I mean, I happen to wear two trackers just for fun, for sleep monitoring and so on. What can our body tell us about how our life is going? How's our health? How's our mental state? You know, what are the things that we can do to monitor our sleep and then to listen to what our body's telling us? It's quite a broad question, but I think, you know, if we're not sleeping well, you know, what's going on?
No, that's a lovely one because, you know, in my therapeutic space, a lot of the way I work is exactly how you're describing it. What's my body doing? What does it feel like? If I'm anxious, where's that feeling sitting in my body? Mm-hmm. You know, yes. So it's lovely. Your body can be like the manometer for telling you that you're too anxious, you know, that sleep time is, you know, it's due and you're not going to go to sleep if you're feeling so wired. So mm-hmm. I think our bodies can tell us a lot, and they are smarter than we are. And one of the reasons is because of this very big nerve called the vagus nerve, mm-hmm. which has a front and a back branch that literally goes into all our organs in our body. So it's an absolute thing. And it definitely can. We can use our bodies to direct where we're at and how we're feeling. And we know when we haven't had enough sleep. Mm-hmm. We can feel it. And that's what gets people upset.
Yes. And then they stress about
it. And the monitoring thing, by the way, is actually something that makes me smile because, you know, you can overdo it. So the part of monitoring sleep, you're getting so used to checking it that you actually feel like now you can control it, but you need to let it go, you know. So sometimes it's taking all the devices off and just going, you know what? The only thing I need to think of is bed equals sleep. That's it.
Right.
And I need to let go, you know. So there's a number of conditions in the body that will also promote sleep at that time.
100%. For me, what I did with the monitoring devices is over a year or two, I tried to correlate how I was feeling with what the data was showing me. And then I realized, hang on, I need to respect this a lot more than I thought I was. Because we can think we're doing okay. We can think we're getting enough sleep. But if our base feeling of what we believe to be good or awesome or optimal, it starts to decay and drop, you know, then suddenly we're like, oh, wow, this is actually terrible when I was feeling fantastic and I haven't felt fantastic for quite a while and I need to go back to feeling fantastic. But I think you can stress about your monitoring because you're waking up every 2 hours. How am I sleeping?
And then the next morning you're going through and, you know, the devices are, some of them are quite accurate, but most of them don't actually give you a quality of sleep reading in terms of the actual, the REM stages and cycling. It hasn't got it quite right. There are a few new products that are pretty accurate, but I think the most important thing is the focus on the devices can sometimes become obsessive. And the very thing you're doing is what's keeping insomnia stopping you from sleeping, because there's too much focus on not sleeping.
It's like, am I asleep? Waking up to say, am I asleep?
Right. And age is a big thing too, because let's be honest, you can't feel fantastic in a whole lot of areas, never mind sleep, because as we age, our sleep changes and shortens, and the quality of our sleep sometimes goes out the window, and it's awfully tragic, but that's just what it does.
It is,
you have to adapt as well.
I've been sober for 17 years, and the best sleep I ever had was 2 weeks after going into a rehab program for about 6 weeks to 2 months. I've never had sleep like that before in my life. I think when my body was just saying, right, okay, we can rest and detox, which was absolutely wonderful. So
and a good example of your body being smarter than you are.
100%. So, Doc, I'd like to just chat about sleep stages, which we can do after this break.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
And we're back on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm chatting with Dr. Okay. Michelle Baker. Yep.
Michelle Baker. The doctor is actually still in progress, by the way.
Okay.
So it's a little bit incorrect, but you can give me a prophetic word. How's that? Yes,
okay. We'll give you the title Doctor of Awesomeness.
Thank you. Okay. I love it. Let's stay with that. Perfect. Yes.
So we have a comment from a listener just before we go back to what we were discussing. The past few months, I've been increasing my magnesium and vitamin D3 intake, and I'm sleeping and feeling great. So how does our diet and supplementation affect our sleep?
Well, I believe it has a huge impact because most of what we're working with health comes from our gut. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that more and more now. And of course, there are certain neurochemicals working at night that are not working during the day, and they're far less, you know. So we're supported by a lot of neurochemistry during the day, and at night it's a very gentle sort of, you know, package of it. Look, the research around magnesium, et cetera, in other words, all the over-the-counter medication that we can use as opposed to getting a sleeping tablet, you mm-hmm. know, from pharmaceuticals or any other kind of pharmaceutical drugs, it's gaining impetus. And in my experience from the point of case studies and also my own health mm-hmm. and my own sleep, there's definitely something in magnesium, yeah. you know, and some people would say it's more, you know, sort of looking for things like magnesium glycinate or theanine so that you're actually using, you know, sort of a direct sort of crossing the blood-brain barrier mm-hmm. to get there. When it comes to the vitamins too, you know, I think that does play a role. And all I'm going to say is that I think they're seeing quite a bit of utility in the combination mm-hmm. of certain things like vitamin D, you know, and magnesium definitely at night. Many, many people mm-hmm. are saying that it helps them. So, you know, and the research is starting to come out. You know, there's a lot of work being done on, you know, because functional medicine is becoming quite a thing. And then, of course, working in homeopathy or in South Africa, traditional medicine, there's no doubt about the fact that there are certain plants that we can use to actually get sleep right. And my take on that is take care, because mm-hmm. like all things, they are also creating chemistry within your body.
Right.
And they all have to be metabolized by your liver and, you know, normally mm-hmm. excreted in the kidneys. So people are quite focused on, oh, but it's natural, you know, I'd rather do that than the other. And yes, of course, perhaps that is better. But also remember, you know, that it's about how much you're taking. So I think dosage is important. And I think with things like, you know, even your magnesium, well, what dosage are you taking? And then listen to whoever the practitioner is
right.
or, you know, whoever's advising you there. Because people will cotton onto one particular thing and then maybe be sort of, you know, overdosing. And, of course, the knock-on effect is invariably on the organs like, you know, the liver.
Yes. So, and I think just have a trusted source. That you can go to for all of these
absolutely.
Things, you know, and a reputable
absolutely.
Source.
Yes.
What in our diet can affect our sleep in a negative way? I think we know alcohol has a very negative effect. Our stimulants like caffeine can affect the quality of our sleep. But if, you know, if we're having diets high in sugar or stuff that's energizing, large pasta or eating a big meat meal late at night, how does diet affect our quality
yeah,
of sleep?
Yeah, well, I think you've named them importantly, you know, in the sort of right order. I think it's also about time of day and quantity. You know, so if it's alcohol, you know, it's earlier in the evening, it's very moderate. It's the type of alcohol you're using. You know, some will have more impact on sleep than others, but invariably it's got to do with the quantity and the timing. So, and people assume that because it feels like alcohol is a sedative, they use it to get themselves to sleep. Mm. But the real story is that it's also, you know, it has antidepressant qualities and it messes with sleep quality. And it's almost like non-arguable that it does yeah. that, because the research has been replicated over and over and over again, you know. So, but it's all about moderate, you know, it's that sort of, you know, if you're going to have that glass of red wine with your dinner at 6 p.m. and you're only going to bed at 11, mm-hmm. you're a night owl. It's, you know, you've given yourself that sort of 4-hour washout.
Right.
So it's not too rigid, but it is definitely a thing. Yeah.
So on that timeline, how far ahead of going to sleep should we be eating our last meal? You know, 2 hours, 1 hour, 6 hours. Can we eat a big meal and go straight?
Yeah,
to
look,
sleep?
I would leave that to the dietitians, and I would certainly not be too, you know, sort of like rigid about what I'm quoting here. But I think it goes back to timing again. You know, that's about having your meal fairly early and keeping your evening meal as a more lighter meal than the one that's really, you know, sort of heavy. But in fact, all your meals, really, if they're just balanced, you know, with the right amount of carbohydrates, protein and, you know, vegetables and things, you know, it's a lifestyle. You know, I don't like to even use the word diet. I think it's so much nicer to stick with a lifestyle approach and go, well, this is how I'm going to live my life. And, you know, again, there's such a lot of understanding and people are getting really smart in terms of looking at their own health, and they're looking at things like fasting. So I'll give you my take on fasting is that, you know, that's how we're designed. So if you're eating your supper fairly early and then you don't sort of have anything else after that, well, sleep. While we're sleeping, we're fasting for, you know, 7 to 8 hours or however long we're sleeping for. So I think that our bodies are designed like that. You know, we need that period of time where we're not, and that's why eating at night when you wake up is definitely not at all recommended. Because, you know, night eating disorder has now been registered as a sleep disorder. So, you know, it's not a great idea to eat. So it's all about timing, quantity. And then also the interesting thing about going back to our bodies are smarter than we are. They're as smart as we are when we're eating a meal. Our brain and our body and our whole sleep kind of rhythm blueprint gets to know what breakfast, lunch, and supper is in terms of the actual meals we're eating, you know. So, it kind of knows time of day too, you know. But, you know, so I mean, it doesn't matter if I have cereal and you have the meal from the night before for breakfast. But the timing of day and knowing that you always have like a protein, a carb or whatever, and this is kind of what it's like. We know that there's some interesting stuff coming out about the fact that biologically we literally, you know, our bodies do get that sense. And we can use it with things like shift work when people travel, you know, across countries. Yeah, and we've got jet lag and we can sort of have breakfast for supper when we're taking off in Joburg so that when we land in America on the other side, you know, we're back into lunch and supper again.
Right.
Yeah.
That's such a fascinating point. My dad, when he traveled internationally, that's exactly what he did. And he just learned that from listening to his body because then he could sleep better. That's fantastic.
That's right. And it's also things like reflux, you know, because that has a huge impact on sleep. So if we're talking diet and we're talking lifestyle, you know, you want to be thinking about the kind of food you're eating at night that's not going to cause reflux because that's going to wake you up.
Reflux or bloating, you know, or those kind of things that are going to make us uncomfortable.
Yes. So a lot of it's just lifestyle and a lot of going back to eating so much more naturally, lots of, you know, greens, fresh food, proteins that are very clean and things, you know, they are also promoting sleep simply because they're not aggravating the gut, causing bloating, you know, or discomfort and causing reflux.
Fantastic. Doc, we'll be right back. Sorry, Michelle, but Dr. Awesome. We'll be back right after these ads.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday here on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Engel, and I'm joined by Dr. Michelle Baker, a sleep specialist. We're chatting all things sleep. Let us have your questions just before we wrap up. 0618951019. That's our WhatsApp number. The one thing, Doctor, as we wrap up, I'd like to touch on, and again, also for myself, finding traveling internationally where the sleep is upset, if I can get my eating of my meal timing to match Johannesburg, I sleep so much better. The jet lag is so much less. So I think this is something that I've discussed and shared with clients for nearly two decades. Sleep is vital to weight loss. I know my weight is up because I monitor it for competing, and I know, okay, I'm not getting enough sleep. If I'm not changing my diet and my weight goes up, I said, okay, there's sleep. How important is sleep and quality of sleep for our weight loss?
I think it's very important, and it's an interesting one you point out, because we do see that one of the risk factors of quite a few sleep disorders, you know, is weight gain. And we know that weight gain then has, you know, as it moves up, has a lot of knock-on effect for other risk factors like cardiovascular disease, etc. It's driven by metabolism. So remember, we started off by talking about circadian rhythm, circadian drive. They're all linked. So the thing is that when your metabolism's going out of sync, you know, and it's not functioning well, or you've got any kind of insulin resistance issue, it's going to be very protective for you to do what you do. So well done for instinctually, again, you've been listening to your body, managing what's going on. So, you know, stress, I think, is one of the big ones that impacts, because it has a direct knock-on effect to metabolic function, and then in turn, you know, your digestion.
And I think it's your comfort as well, because if you're carrying a lot of excess mass, you're not going to be moving as comfortably in the bed.
And, you know, we do know, too, that sleep has a direct influence on pain. So if you have any kind of pain syndrome, and, you know, getting people to sleep well first will improve their pain. You know, that's just a sideline. But going back to the question you asked around weight gain and sleep is, you know, it is definitely a risk factor for the actual, especially chronic insomnia and other comorbid sleep disorders, especially like sleep apnea.
Yes.
So, you know, there is most definitely that's a wonderful thing to say, because the job then as practitioners is let's get everybody sleeping well as a starting point. So those of us who are working in sleep will work from that perspective, but work within a 24-hour cycle.
Right. So I think the message today is prioritize your sleep. If you're not able to do it alone, get professional help. And make it a pillar of the quality of your life, and then everything else will flow from that.
Very nice. That's very nice. You can wear that one as a badge of honor. Well done.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining us in studio today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you. Thank you. You've been listening to the Disco Medical Monday here on 101.9 High FM. And remember to prioritize your sleep, because you deserve all the wonderful gifts that it will bring you.